Hello, Chaney.
How are you today?
I'm doing the thing.
You're doing the thing?
Yeah.
What's the thing?
The thing is sitting in a chair next to a microphone, looking at your pretty face, and recording a podcast.
That's a pretty good thing. Hey, let me ask, do you remember the time that I told you about that dream where there was an avalanche?
No.
It must have been while you were sleeping.
Ah!
Welcome to Two Sisters Present
America's Sweethearts. I'm Bailey.
And I'm Chaney.
And this is the podcast where we talk about women in film and explore their catalog of work by genre. And now we are starting a very new series with a very new sweetheart. Take it away, Chaney.
Sandra Bullock.
Da 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 da.
I love her.
I do too.
We picked four random categories, which were what, Bailey? We picked rom-com,
sci-fi,
thriller,
and action.
Yeah, I'm super excited about those. You can go back and listen to our quick take, Sandra Bullock quick take, if you want to know what movies we're going to do. And of course, feel free to email us or find us on Instagram or Twitter and tell us what fan pick you want for our fifth movie. So please let us know. We want to do what you want us to do. So we can only do that if you let us know what you want.
And it's exciting to relinquish some control and give it to someone else. It gives an element of surprise for us.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to let go of some control sometimes, but this is an easy one. Please, tell us. Okay, so I had to do my personal favorite Sandra Bullock rom-com, which is While You Were Sleeping. What are your thoughts on this movie?
I think that it is a very watchable movie. I had no problem watching this twice. I mean, you know, it's easy. It's a very easy movie to watch, you know? It's not challenging. It's funny. It's charming. I like it.
I mean, I watch it about one time a year at least. Yeah, it's just fun and charming and light.
You know, I hadn't seen this movie in probably over 10 years.
Really?
Yeah.
That makes me sad for you.
Well, I mean, that just means that there was an element of newness. I mean, even though I've seen it, you can't remember everything. So I don't have the movie memorized. So yeah, that element of surprise I was just talking about.
So the first time I watched the movie for our podcast, I was only half paying attention because I had seen it so many times. And then I was like, you know what? I need to actually devote attention to this movie because I was doing my research at the same time. And so I was like, you know what? Okay, I'll go ahead and watch it the second time just to make sure that I didn't miss anything. And then the second time I was quoting almost everything word for word. I was like, okay, yeah, I didn't need to do this. But that's okay because I love it so much.
I guess it's really fortunate that I watched it a second time because if I had not watched it again last night, I wouldn't have it all in my brain the way that you do.
I mean, I watched it yesterday and then I watched it again today and it's on again right now. So yeah, I can definitely help you out if you get a little hazy on some things.
I'm just glad that you're leading this one.
I mean, I'm happy to. I found out a lot of fun little things about this movie. And actually, it was one of the easiest to find research on, which was really helpful because last year was the 25th anniversary of the movie.
Ah, so there were like reunions and stuff.
The director talked, Sandra Bullock talked, Peter Gallagher, Bill Pullman, all of them had something to say. So I have a lot of quotes from people. This is in regards to it being the 25th anniversary. Sandra Bullock said that, I think it's time to make my kids watch it. In this next week, I'm going to watch it with them. I avoid looking at myself like all actors, but when I see it through my kids' eyes, I can actually enjoy it.
Aww.
But I love that she's going to share it with her kids now that they're old enough to appreciate it and that she wants to share this with
That's
them.
That's very sweet.
Because it's so touching and wonderful. Anyway, I'm really excited to get started on this one. Are you ready?
I am so ready.
Okay, so we'll start off with how it was received.
Okay.
First, I'll say I got my sources from Rotten Tomatoes, Mental Floss, and BuzzFeed, along with Wikipedia, and I'm sure some other things sprinkled in there. But those were the main sources, so you're welcome. Thank you. Okay.
Great job.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So critics all pretty much said the same thing, which was, by all accounts, this movie shouldn't have really done great. It's the same trope as any other romantic comedy. You could see where it was going to go. Very predictable. And yet, it's fantastic.
Uh-huh.
It's because of the charm and charisma of the two leads, which is Sandra Bullock and Bill Pullman. The really fun thing about this is Sandra Bullock had been in a couple of movies at this point. She was in Love Potion Number 9, which was her first romantic comedy. However, she was not really a lead. She was a secondary character, so when this movie came along, she was not at the top of the list. She was just starting. And she was in the filming of Speed when this movie was about to start rolling. So they actually had a few people in mind. Are you ready for our game?
I'm ready for this game. Cannot wait.
It's a fun one. Oh, do you want to guess? No, let's say. I'm going to give you some options, and then you can tell me which one you think it is. Okay? Working titles for the film. One is true, two are a lie. Okay? Different tracks.
Okay.
Coma Guy. Or Unlikely Romance. So which one? Different tracks, Coma Guy, or Unlikely Romance?
Coma Guy.
Coma Guy for the win. Aren't we glad it changed?
Yeah.
Who do you think was the top choices for this movie? For Lucy's character?
Meg Ryan.
She was one of them.
Ha-ha, cha-ching.
Any other guesses?
Julia Roberts.
Yes.
Ding.
She turned it down. According to the director, he said lots of big actresses passed on it. I think to this day, Julia Roberts says it is one of her most regrettable decisions.
Well, you know what? She would have done well. She would have made this movie her own movie. And I feel like Sandra Bullock did something equal but different. Simply put.
Yeah, there's a couple of more. Do you want to guess or do you want me to just tell you?
Okay. Molly Ringwald.
No.
Okay. Who else was like a romantic comedy person?
I'm gonna let you think outside of the box. Don't just think romantic comedy. Who were big women in that time, in the 90s? Let's see. Let me think of a clue. I need your love.
Oh, Demi Moore?
Yep. That's the one. Demi Moore was actually the prime candidate for this movie. And she was really excited because she had never been in a romantic comedy before. And this was the one that she wanted to do. But there was some disagreements on the contract. And so they ended up not taking her. And Sandra Bullock saw the script. She called in and she was like, hey, I really, really want this part. I feel like I really connect with it. And so they're like, okay, well, come on in. They were also looking at Nicole Kidman, but they decided she was too pretty for the part.
Excuse me?
They
Sandra Bullock is beautiful.
I know. When I read that, I was like, what? But they were like, you know, we just didn't see Nicole Kidman sitting in a toll booth. And I was like, okay, goodbye, gentlemen. Goodbye.
That's exactly my thought.
Yeah. Jamie Gertz and Gina Davis were also considered for the part. But when Sandra Bullock walked in the room, she did the monologue, which is actually on my TV right now, where she's talking to Peter Gallagher while he's in the coma in the hospital. And she's saying, you know, have you ever confused a guy in a coma? You know, I bet you're too sensible to believe in
love at first sight.
Yeah. And she stood up and left the room. And the director said, that's our girl, because she made them cry. So she was always meant for this. This is the role that thrust her into stardom.
I have to say I'm really excited to be doing this series and to watch some Sandra Bullock movies because I haven't watched her in anything in a long time. And so I don't fully remember her energy. And her energy in this stands out for a lot of reasons. Just the way that she plays the character. And so I'm really interested to see some of the other roles and see if her energy and what she brings to it are similar to this role or if it was entirely created for this role.
You know, that's a good thing to pay attention to. And I'm curious about that too. I mean, I feel like Sandra Bullock brings a lot of Sandra Bullock into her parts, which is what makes it so wonderful. And this movie specifically, the director really wanted the actors to have creative freedom. So they did a lot of ad-libbing. So there's a part where she pours the milk for the cat and she dips an Oreo in that. That was all her. That was not scripted.
Oh.
There are quirks and little creative moments and energy that she brings to it that is very much just her style. Anyway, Sandra Bullock, upon getting the part and after all the success of the movie, she said, "I was an auditioning actor. This was one of those things that came along that I wanted so badly, not as a desperate actor, but because the story was so sweet. I believe it's because Demi Moore couldn't do it, and I got it. So I'm grateful to Demi Moore every single day."
Oh, that's so cute.
Isn't that cute? Anyway, do you want to play the men's side now?
Okay, and this is for Bill Pullman's character?
This is for Bill Pullman's character, yes.
Richard Gere?
No.
I feel like the men that I think of just wouldn't have been considered for this role. I don't know what year this came out.
It came out in 1995. This one's a little harder. Do you want me to just tell you?
Yeah, just tell me.
Okay, well, first let me give you a clue. "I've had the time of my life."
Tom Cruise?
No. What movie do you think I'm talking about?
Top Gun?
No!
What's the song in Top Gun? I've only seen that movie once, okay? So sue me.
"The time of my life." And she runs and she jumps and he picks her up and she's in the air.
Oh. You know what? I actually was going to guess him, but I couldn't think of his name and I can't think of it now. But he's the dancer guy.
Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, also in Ghost. Yes.
Yes, also
Demi
in
Moore
Ghost.
And Patrick Swayze. They just wanted to make Ghost, but...
But a romantic comedy. No death involved.
Just a coma.
Yeah, just a coma. James Spader.
Oh, I love James Spader.
Russell Crowe, Dylan McDermott, Harrison Ford, Dennis Quaid, and okay. This one is my favorite. Matthew McConaughey. Fresh-faced Matthew McConaughey. And he came in, and they were very, very charmed. Yeah, they were very charmed by him, but... They couldn't get over his Texas accent. He said that he could change it, but they just didn't really believe him. So they went in a different direction.
I have heard just about Matthew McConaughey. He lives here in Austin, and he teaches at UT. And I've heard people have run into him in bars and stuff, and his accent is so thick that they cannot understand what he's saying.
How funny. But so they didn't go with Matthew McConaughey. They ended up going with Bill Pullman. And one of the wonderful things about this movie is Bill Pullman, like Sandra Bullock, had never really been a lead in a romantic comedy before. It was both of their first shot. And he had just come off of Sleepless in Seattle, where he was the other boyfriend that Meg Ryan left for Tom Hanks. So this was his opportunity to show that he was an attractive, sexy, leading man in a romantic comedy.
Well, this was around the time of Casper, right?
Casper was 95 too. But he was actually really worried that it was going to be really silly, and he didn't want to be in a silly show. But then he read it.
Casper is serious.
Well, for his first romantic comedy.
Right, I understand.
He read the script, and the tone of it, of course there are funny moments, but it's about loneliness. It's very, very vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So we have our two leads, Bill Pullman and Sandra Bullock. One other quick little who almost played who for the role of Peter, who was played by Peter Gallagher, Mr. Eyebrows. Pierce Brosnan, Bond, was thought of for the part, but it ultimately went to Peter Gallagher, which I think is great. I didn't appreciate him as a kid. I don't know whether the eyebrows just freaked me out when I was a kid, but now I'm like, oh yeah, he is a very attractive guy, and he's really funny in this movie. When he thinks he has amnesia, it's so funny.
I do want to talk about that later.
Okay, so we have our cast, which it fills out with Glanis Johns. A lot of people know her from Mary Poppins, but we know her from Danny Kaye's Court Jester.
Who is she in The Court Jester? I can place her in Mary Poppins.
The main lady in Court Jester. I can't think of her name right now. Captain.
Wait a second. Really?
Yeah.
Wait, she's the mother?
In Mary Poppins? Yes.
No. In this movie.
She's the grandmother.
She's the grandmother. Wow, I did not see that. Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, she's just as cute as a button. Then we have Peter Boyle, who plays the dad, and Jack Warden, who plays Saul.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the biggest names in the cast. Anyway, so the movie was made for $17 million and earned 10 times that amount at $180 million. It was something that none of them expected. And, of course, it thrust Sandra Bullock into stardom.
It sounds like it was wildly successful.
Yes, very wildly successful. Okay, so do you want to just dive into the movie and I will throw in some facts here and there?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. We start off with Sandra Bullock talking about her dad and how her mother has passed and her dad had this very special relationship, and they always talked about traveling, but they never went anywhere outside of Chicago and Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And that the relationship that her mother and he had was one full of a lot of love, and that she gave him the world, which was a globe, and mm-hmm. she's always had this desire to travel and see the world, but she's stuck in a toll booth.
Yeah, I like how at the very beginning it says something, I just don't remember this all being so orange.
Yeah.
Which yeah. I think is a really cute line. I don't know if it fits with the rest of the movie. Because it makes me feel like there's going to be a lot more of, like, whimsical things throughout the movie. Or at least have a tie-in in the end, you know?
There are a couple of lines in this movie that don't quite fit. That's one of them. Another one is when she jumps on the track and is like, Mister, there's a train coming. It's really fast. It's an express. Like, no one who is in a dire situation like that is going to spend the time to come up with these witty lines.
No. My words would be limited to, wake up, oh my gosh, that'd be all I'd say.
We're going to die. Yeah. You know, this is one of those times, Bailey, that you're going to have to tell me to stop, because there's going to be way more than 5 facts this time. I learned a lot.
I am okay with that, and I will very eagerly look the other way once you pass your 5-point criteria.
So, you know, she's lonely, which anyone who works in a toll booth or a job like that, you know, that takes a strong-willed person, because it is very isolating, and especially mm-hmm. someone like Lucy, who doesn't have any family, and it seems like she has maybe a couple of friends, but they're only work friends. I don't know that she has any friends outside of her workplace.
Right. At a certain period in the movie, I thought to myself, I want to know more about her, you know, life story. And this was before I knew that she was friends with the other woman that worked in the toll booth and went to the New Year's party. But I thought, like, does she have no friends to give her perspective? Because the way that she romanticizes over this man is somewhat delusional.
It's very junior high school mentality, which originally this movie was reversed, and it was a man who fell in love with a woman in a coma.
Oh, I don't like that at all. That's terrible. That's really, really bad.
Yeah, the producers were like, because this is a Disney movie. They're like, you need to reverse it because this is very predatorial and creepy. So they switched it, And they were like, you know, it's still a little creepy, but Sandra makes it because she plays on the loneliness of it as opposed to the I'm a stalker.
Right. I was thinking, like, this could very easily move into, like, the horror thriller genre of stalker movies.
Yes.
But it's kept lighthearted enough, and Sandra Bullock is just so plain likable that you forgive her for these weird fixations.
They had to make sure that the comedy was played up. Otherwise, it was going to come across too creepy. So, anyway, she works in her toll booth, and Peter Callahan comes by every day to drop off his token to take the train. And then one day, robbers come up and start to mess with him, and he ends up falling on the tracks. They run off. She sees it happen. She runs to the tracks, jumps on the tracks, and of course is giving her comedy lines of the train's coming. But one fun thing, well, actually a couple fun things. The production team was really, really worried that they were going to blow Sandra Bullock up because there are so many different parts of the train track that if you touch, you'll get electrocuted and just die.
Mm-hmm.
They were filming, I think they were filming in Chicago, but they were able to shut off the tracks, but they were able to turn the tracks on further down so that the train could actually be on Move. The track at the same time the back end was on the track that was on and the front end was off. And so the back end of the train could actually pull it backwards. And so then in reverse, it looks like the train is coming.
Wow.
The roll that they do off of the track, they actually moved the train, they pulled it backwards, and they rolled onto the track. So that whole scene is in reverse.
Oh.
I watched it because the director was like, it's a little wonky if you pay attention to it. I can't catch it. It does not look like it's reversed to me.
I just, like, the only thoughts that I have about that scene is logistically, how difficult is it to move a dead weight body, like baby doll, rag doll body, by rolling? Is that something that the inertia happens easily and you're able to continue rolling where they end up rolling back onto their back and you keep rolling some more? I feel like it's probably more difficult than it seemed in that movie.
Maybe. I don't know. I've never tried it. I've never tried to roll a incapacitated body.
As soon as I get the opportunity, I'm gonna try it.
next time Matt is sleeping, you can just lay down next to him and just try to roll him over.
Oh,
do you think
man.
He would take kindly to that?
Oh no, that's totally a violation. Doesn't matter who it is. Unless you're saving them from an oncoming train.
Yeah, right. And she does. She saves him from the train. They go to the hospital. She doesn't know this guy's name. And she's like, can I go see him? They're like, no, you're not related. And under her breath, she says, oh, I was going to marry that man. And a well-intentioned nurse overhears this, mistakes that as they are engaged. This is his fiance. And then the whole premise of the movie begins.
I know that there is more than one scene with the hot dog guy, but I did want to remark upon the first time that we go to see the hot dog guy. First of all, Sandra Bullock says the usual, and he doesn't know what she's talking about because he doesn't recognize her. And then her boss walks up and says the usual, and he makes the hot dog, although her boss cuts in front of the lady behind her. And if you watch her, you can see the lady's face and how politely annoyed she is. And I just want to say, like, great job, you extra in the background, because that was some great face acting. And then also, I just want to ask, what is it like to frequent a hot dog place so often that you can very confidently ask for your usual?
As someone who has so many dietary restrictions, when I did eat out, I usually ate out at the same places. So they got to know me.
That's true, but there are no hot dog places in Austin. There's like a single hot dog place.
True, but this is Chicago, and I feel like I've seen a lot of movies where it's based in Chicago and there's hot dog stands. So that could just be something that we're not familiar with.
True. But would you want to eat hot dogs that frequently is really what I'm asking. Because I don't think I would. And I enjoy a hot dog.
I love a hot dog. I haven't had a hot dog in a really long time. What is that line? Jennifer Coolidge. It makes me want a hot dog real bad.
Good job. I'm glad you came up with that.
Thank you, Jennifer Coolidge. You are a gem. Okay. Well, speaking of background actors that do a really good job, there's the iconic paperboy that is going down the sidewalk on the slick ice and he falls on his bike. That was a one-take wonder. It was an accident and they loved it, but the poor paperboy broke his wrist.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But hey, that's one of the iconic parts of this movie. So he's in the cinematic hall of fame of iconic moments. So good job, guy. Sorry about your wrist. I hope it healed properly. Moving on, we meet the Callahans, which is the big family. Really great scene. Anytime that the whole family is involved, it's so magical. It really feels like a family, the way they talk over each other, and there's misunderstandings there, but it's funny, and it's kind of anarchy, but it all makes you feel really comfy at the same time. It's just really smart writing.
Oh, yeah, and also it's fully believable why Lucy does not have the opportunity to correct the mistake. Because they won't let her speak, and by the time she gets an opportunity to, she feels kind of trapped within that lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, she tries to say it a couple times, and this is over the span of, a week and a half? So, I mean, yeah, of course there's always the time to tell the truth, but we do see her attempt it a couple of times, and then she ends up relinquishing that into the hands of Saul, the neighbor, who overhears her talking to Peter and knows the truth that she is not the fiance. And speaking of the word fiance, can you say fiance for me?
Fiance.
Okay. There are three different ways to
say fiance. Yeah.
There are three different ways to say fiance. There's fiance, fiance, and fiance. And all three of those ways of saying it are in that one scene at the very beginning when the whole family comes in. It's really funny. Anyway.
She's the fiance. Yeah, I did notice that.
Yeah. Okay, and then she gets invited over for Christmas because they missed Christmas because he falls on the track on Christmas Day. So she gets invited over for Christmas and she feels like she can't say no. She sleeps on the couch, and that night, Jack comes home, who is Peter's brother, who is played by Bill Pullman.
I do want to point out that the gift opening scene is a really beautiful moment in encapsulating her loneliness, because she's there witnessing this thing that she really, really wants, and it seems to everyone else that she's a part of it, but she knows that she's separate from it, and she knows that she's a fraud. And just like how like emotional that would be for Lucy.
It's almost even more isolating than she already was. It's really, really heartbreaking. There's a lot of moments in this and she plays it so delicately. She has to put on this mask that she's okay, but you can still see it crushing her on the inside that this isn't gonna last.
Right.
It's really, really, really sad. She's so good. So that brings us to Joe Jr., which we meet the landlord earlier on, and his son, Joey Jr. This originally was supposed to be filmed in New York, but then that was too expensive, so they changed it to Chicago, but they did not change Joey Jr.'s accent.
Oh, my God. You know, it's because of Joe Jr. I was confused as to where we were.
Yeah. So you have this Italian Brooklyn guy in the middle of Chicago. But I don't care because it's so good. It's so good. But he has this infatuation with Lucy, and Jack keeps coming in at these inopportune times when Lucy and Joey Jr. are having these interactions, and so he thinks that there's a relationship going on there, or that Lucy's lying about the whole thing, which she is, but he thinks that her intention
is... Not the right lie.
Right, exactly, not the right lie.
Also, he asks about Bill Pullman's character, asks Joe Jr. if he knows the woman in whatever apartment, and he's like, know her? I'm dating her. And, like, before that, he's like, live here? I own this building. And I was like, Joe Jr., I like to imagine that every time someone asks him a question, he's got to repeat what they say in an offended tone, then claim it in some possessive way. Kind of like, Joe Jr., do you think the moon is made of cheese? Do I think the moon is made of cheese? I cultured the cheese that the moon is made of. You know, just like that. Like, I like to imagine that that's what Joe Jr. is doing in his head every time someone asks him a question.
Yeah, yeah. I love that. He's definitely a fun character.
Hey, why did you pause it?
Potty break.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Don't go too far. We'll be right back. Enjoying Two Sisters Present America's Sweethearts? Feel free to leave us a review.
Tell us what you love.
And if you must, tell us what you don't love.
I don't love mayonnaise.
I mean about the podcast.
Right.
Contact us through Twitter, Instagram, or email.
Find our handles on our website, www.twosisterspresent.com.
You can also join our Patreon with exclusive content and access to picking your own movie or artist for us to cover.
What? You can pick the next America's Sweetheart?
Sure can. Find out all the info at www.patreon.com/twosisterspresent.
Thank you and goodbye.
Later. In a time when quarantine cabarets and digital performances are widespread and flourishing, chances are you've needed backing tracks, especially for those songs that might not be as mainstream. Well, the great people at Let's Play It Recordings have got you covered. Your on-demand digital accompanist and orchestra.
For over 10 years, Let's Play It has been providing performers and organizations around the world with professionally produced backing tracks for study, auditions, demos, and more. Ranging from piano accompaniment to fully orchestrated instrumentals and specializing in productions that are less commercially available.
They even offer customer orders. If you've got sheet music and need it recorded, they're here to help, along with a large catalog of their own material available for production.
All backing tracks are studio quality, catered alongside friendly customer service, and all at affordable prices with you, the performer, in mind.
So head over to letsplayitrecordings.com to see and hear for yourself. Take a look at their catalog, hear backing track samples, see all of their production services, and request your order today. Mention Two Sisters Present, and you'll even get 10% off your order.
That's letsplayitrecordings.com, your digital accompanist and orchestra. Ready?
Oh, super ready.
3, 2, 1, go.
So then
she takes home, God, I can't remember any other character names. The coma guy. When she takes home his stuff. And she's going through his wallet, and in his wallet are only pictures of him.
Well, there's one picture of him as a kid with his brother Jack. But that's then true. As adults, it's like him with his tennis equipment and him with his skis. And yes.
It's pretty funny.
Yes. But she also finds a can of tuna, and it occurs to her that he has a cat. So she has to go to his apartment looking for a cat. She swings open a door and hits Jack right in the face because he's also in Peter's apartment. He's like, what are you doing here? And she's like, he has a cat. He doesn't have a cat. And poof, a cat magically appears.
Fluffy.
Every time that Jack thinks he's got her on a lie, the universe is like, no, we'll provide an answer for you.
Yeah, the universe is really on her side throughout the entire movie until she claims the lie herself. So then we have Jack like you said, always trying to catch her in a lie. He's like, you do not know my brother. They go to the hospital together after this scene, right?
Yes.
Yes. So he asks her what his favorite stooge is.
Uh-huh.
And she says Curly, so that's everyone's favorite stooge. Do you have a favorite Three Stooges stooge?
Curly. He's everyone's favorite. No, I don't know.
Yeah, why not even ask?
It's Curly, Larry, and Moe, right?
Yeah, I'll go with Groucho Marx.
You can't say who's your favorite Three Stooges and then go outside of the Three Stooges.
That was my polite way of saying I don't like the Three Stooges.
That's fine. You cannot like them. That's fine. But before that, she was put into the elevator with one of Peter's business friends and is told a story about a pencil, a basketball game, and an injury.
Uh-huh.
It comes in handy in this moment where the family's like, well, you know, if she wanted to prove that she was in a relationship with Peter, she'd prove it. So then she brings back the story she just heard about the pencil, the ball game, and the accident.
Yes. He only has one testicle.
Nobody wants to look to check, but then Mama
buckles down. It is such a violation. It doesn't matter if it's your mother.
No.
There's no consent there. He's a coma patient. And you know, when I just watched a movie the other night, the movie's called Far and Away. It has Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman in it. And there's a part where he's passed out and Nicole Kidman's mother is like trying to dress this wound because he was shot. And to cover him up, the mother puts a bowl over his genitals, and whenever the mother leaves, Nicole Kidman comes over and takes a peek under the bowl. I don't know why this is a source of humor, because it's not funny.
Naughty, naughty girl. That, no.
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe that's why they wanted Nicole Kidman in this movie, because they saw that and they were like, oh, that reminds us. Someone has to peep at Peter's pecker.
Peek at Peter's pepper. Pecker. I can't even say it.
Peek at Peter's pecker.
Yeah, peek at Peter's pepper. Pecker! Ah! I peek at Peter's pecker.
Yes, it's not Peter Piper picks a pick a peck pepper peck pee pee pupple.
Peter Piper picks a peck of peckers.
Okay, moving on from the pecker talk. Then Jack comes over to Lucy's house. Oh, before that even happens.
Joe Jr.
shows up.
I love the hand motions he keeps giving her.
Yeah, he knocks on her door, is like, you stood me up for the ice capades, and throws his hands up.
It's so good.
Yeah. It's so good. And, you know, walks into her apartment. And at this point, Jack already has speculation between Joey Jr. and Lucy. So when Jack knocks on the door, says, hey, it's Jack, and Joey Jr.'s in her apartment, she's like, what am I going to do with you? So she throws him into her closet.
Right. I don't know how she got him to stay in that closet for that long, because it wasn't just Jack. Saul came over too, right?
Oh, that's what, yeah, it was Saul first.
It was Saul first, and Saul tells her to keep lying, because that's what the family needs. And I just want to say right now, like, that whole premise really confuses me, because it is never okay to control someone's reality, even if it is well-intentioned, because you are still making those choices. The other people are not. So I don't understand why everyone keeps telling her to lie in this movie.
Well, to be fair, her boss tells her to pull the plug.
Only the second time around. The first time he says you have to keep going along with it.
But Saul is the only one that maintains that mentality. But after Saul leaves, Joey makes a sound in the closet, so she opens the door and he's trying on her shoes. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, then Jack knocks on the door. So he has a gift. They go over to Peter's apartment. It's a couch that does not fit Peter's apartment, both physically and stylistically.
Stylistically.
It is very much
the wrong aesthetic.
Yeah. Anyway, they end up pushing the couch through. It breaks the frame of the door and then knocks a vase over with blue liquid that ruins the white carpet. But then they come outside and his van is blocked. So, and this is another cute little moment where he's like, are you going to leave me here by myself? And she said, yeah, kind of. He said, well, why don't I walk you home for protection? And she said, I'm okay. I don't need protection. And he goes, oh, no. Protection for me.
Yeah.
I think that walk home is what really, he drops his guard on his trying to foil her. And she really lets her personality shine. And that's where they really start to connect and realize that there's something between them.
Yeah, and the slippy slidey act on the ice is very cute.
It is very cute, but you could just walk on the snow that's 2 feet away.
Yeah. Because I think they were flirting.
Yeah. Yeah. So cute. Okay, what's next?
Oh, we find out that, well, because of the rocking chair, that Jack really wants to build his own furniture, and he doesn't want to take over his father's business.
Right.
And there's the guilt involved with coming through with the truth that he wants it just to be Gallagher? Or is it Callahan?
Callahan is the character name. Gallagher is the actor.
So Callahan is their last name.
Callahan in the movie, yes.
Right. So, you know, it'll go from Callahan and Sons to Callahan and Son to just Callahan, and he feels an enormous weight of responsibility just to not let his dad down.
Mm-hmm. And he shares that with Lucy.
Yes.
So then the next thing is Mary goes to visit Lucy in her toll booth and brings her friend Beth, and they announce to Lucy's friend that Lucy is engaged to her brother Peter, and Lucy's friend freaks out. And as Mary and Beth are leaving the booth, Lucy's friend says, girl, are you pregnant?
She says it sarcastically, yes, I'm pregnant.
And Beth hears that. And then she's like, no, you have to have sex in order to be pregnant. But then, of course, Mary comes running into the family and is like, hey, Lucy is pregnant. And the family does not know what to do with this information. Jack immediately leaves the house and goes to find her. And Lucy is getting ready to go to her friend's New Year's party, and Jack decides to tag along.
Mm-hmm.
They get into the house, and she pours herself a glass of liquor, and he's like, you shouldn't have that. And she's like, why not? And he says, it's not bad good for the baby. Right when the music dies down, so the entire house hears that Lucy is pregnant.
Oh my gosh, I think we've all experienced something like that.
She leaves the house, he follows her out, and she's like, should I take some responsibility in what just happened in there? And he's like, no, of course not. It's just, you know, with the Joe Jr. thing. She's like, what Joe Jr. thing? The leaning thing. The whole thing just cracks me up because he starts then explaining what leaning is. It's full bodies, wanting, and accepting. And then you hear Joe Jr. say, hey, Luce, this guy bothering you? Because it looks like he's leaning. It gets me every time.
It's pretty good. I also love that when he turns around, you know, to swagger away, a low branch knocks his New Year's hat from his head. He's just a mess.
He still saunters off and fixes his hat like nothing happened. Love it. Then she says, okay, well, let's talk about the other thing. And he's like, what other thing? Why'd you think I was pregnant?
Yeah, I think that he was propelled by something that he didn't fully understand at that time. Because I think that the reason why he needed to go talk to her is because he realized that he was developing these feelings. And he didn't know what to do with the information of her being pregnant.
Right.
I think that he needed confirmation. I think he needed to figure something out, and he wasn't even sure what that was.
Right. After she says, so your brother wouldn't want to be with someone like me unless I'm pregnant, he said, well, the truth is, you're not really Peter's type, because she is his type.
Right, and he can't say that.
But he can't say that. It only makes her feel even more alone and more unloved. And then Peter wakes up.
Yeah. Peter wakes up. This is one of my favorite parts, I have to say. Just because of Peter Gallagher's performance.
It's so good.
Do I like Jell-O?
Okay, now that line actually was an improvised line, and it turned out to be the director's favorite line in the whole movie.
That's so good, because up until that point, like, you know, he's like getting more and more agitated because people are telling him that he has amnesia, and like that's got to be like really disconcerting when someone is telling you something about yourself and you've barely had time to like really take in your bearings, because you wake up in a hospital, you don't even remember what happened to you, someone says you have amnesia, and you're like, I'm questioning everything now.
Right, right.
Do I like Jell-O?
And when everybody leaves, the mom says goodbye, and he goes, goodbye, Mom. Mom? Like, is that even right? It's just so good. So good. And Lucy tries to tell them at that point, and she says, I really need to tell you something important. And they said, oh, you're not pregnant. We know.
Ugh.
Jack told us. She's like, ah, every time.
Just let me talk.
Just let me talk. One scene we did miss, though, is the card game between Jack and Peter when Jack right. realizes he has feelings for Lucy. And he's like, you know, I've never envied you. I've always been proud of you. But now I actually want something that you have. Mm-hmm. So high card gets Lucy.
Best 2 out of 3.
So anyway, we know that Jack has feelings for her. We can kind of guess that. I think she's mentioned it to her boss that she has feelings yes. for Jack mm-hmm. at this point. Now, Peter is awake. He's told he has amnesia and that he's engaged and he doesn't know to who. Lucy just wants to get out of there. And that's when she talks to Saul, and Saul's like, I will take care of it. Don't worry. I got this. And she's like, great. Let's all go in there and we'll tell him together.
And then he ghosts.
Yeah. Saul disappears. Seriously, man? Okay, so he says that he's gonna tell him, and she's like, when? On my golden anniversary. Jack takes Lucy home. This is one of the most heart-wrenching parts for me. She says that, you know, he's been a really good friend this week. He says, you know, I think you and Peter are really gonna be happy, and I'm really glad you're not gonna be alone anymore. Mm-hmm. We know that Lucy's gonna be alone.
Yeah.
And it's just so sad, because she takes it, smiles, and says goodnight. And it just is so heartbreaking.
I love her whispery delivery of those lines, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think about that because it's not a super close-up. She's the whole cab away. She whispers those lines. I mean, it makes a whole lot of sense for her character, but it's also a very interesting choice because, I don't know, I just, it stood out to me because I feel like I don't see that often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really lovely scene. But then Saul goes to talk to Peter. And Peter Gallagher's reactions in this scene are also priceless. Because Saul is saying, you know, I've known you forever. I love you. But you're a putz. Excuse me? And he says, yeah, Peter, you're a putz. Is there a point to this? It's so good. But Saul is basically saying, hey, you need to give Lucy a chance. All fall in love with her in seconds, so when she comes in, if you don't fall in love with her in 2 minutes, then let her go. But if you see what we only took seconds to see, then you'll propose again and not let her slip away.
Right.
Jack comes in and they're moving him to another floor. We uh-huh. hear the squirrel story. Oh. Peter has new life, you know, he faced death, he wants to start over and is looking at things differently. He starts to tell Jack the story about the squirrels, because apparently when he was a kid, Peter saved these squirrels that had fallen out of a tree. But the truth is that he threw rocks at the squirrels and then saved them when they fell out of the nest. This is actually a true story.
Really?
This is a story about the writer's brother.
Oh, wow.
And the writer's brother never forgave him for putting that story in the movie.
You know, I love Bill Pullman's reaction to the, all he does is, ew.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Peter, ew. Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. I love their back and forth. They really feel like brothers in that moment. It's really great. Really great. So he's moved, and then enter Ashley Bartlett Bacon.
Yes, the actual proposee.
Yes, so Ashley Bartlett Bacon, who's played by Allie Walker, actually wanted the part of Lucy, but she didn't get it, and Sandra Bullock did, and she wanted to hate Sandra so much. And then she met Sandra, and she was like, okay, no, I love you. I can't. Man, I really wanted to dislike you. But anyway, so Ashley Bartlett Bacon is who Peter had originally proposed to, whose cat is actually living at Peter's house. Mm-hmm. And she comes in, and she's like, hi, why didn't you answer my calls, and you're engaged? What? He's like, yeah, I'm a new man, Ashley. I don't remember who I'm engaged to or how I proposed, but I'm gonna do this. And she's like, well, fine, I want my stuff back. And he says, well, I want my stuff back. And she's like, what stuff? Your nose? You can't have my nose back?
I love that we know that there is, like, this other person that says, I will marry you, because she's left a message on the phone. But we don't really know anything about her or anything about that proposal or anything. Not having seen the movie in a long time, I was assuming there was going to be a whole lot more conflict than there actually was. And honestly, I found it surprising that when she comes in and she's like, excuse me, you proposed to me. And he's just like, you said no. And she's like, I had to think about it. I was confused. Like, you moved to Portugal. And she's like, yeah, so? It's just funny. Like, I was totally imagining, well, it's not even that. Like, later on, we find there's even another layer that she was not even free to accept her proposal in the first place.
Right. She's so married.
It's like, you think there's going to be this conflict, but it's like, yeah. It's just that there's so many degrees away from it actually being a legitimate concern in this movie. And I thought that was really funny.
Yeah. Then Lucy comes in right after Ashley leaves, and he proposes to her, and she just kind of freezes. Then there's the wedding.
That happens tomorrow? Why?
Yeah. Before there's the wedding, though, Jack comes over to Lucy's house.
We have socks.
Oh my goodness. I don't really like socks, for one. There are some socks I like, but I'm very particular about my socks. But I certainly would never wear my socks with my high heel shoes.
Yeah, you know, and I was trying to think about it because, you know, we're in Texas and we don't have real winters. So I'm really wondering, like, people that wear shoes like that, that live in very, very cold climates, how do you keep your feet warm if not wearing socks like that?
Well, and I understand, because, I mean, she does not wear those socks to the wedding.
No, she does.
She's just doing it inside her house. You're not going to know whether those shoes really fit if, or what they really look like, if you have those frumpty dumpty socks on. Because those puffy they weren't socks. Like dainty ankle socks. Yeah. Yeah, they were knitted socks.
They're like hunting socks.
Yeah. So Jack comes over. She has her wedding dress around her neck. It ends with her asking him, is there any reason why I shouldn't marry your brother? And he says, I can't give you a reason. And that was his opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
All he had to say was, I love you. And then she could have come clean.
He didn't want to do that to his brother.
I know.
He thought that the engagement was legitimate.
Right. So then the wedding happens, and it's a very modest wedding. I mean, Peter is with his IV still, you know, plugged in.
And she's wearing a very simple dress.
Very simple dress, but she still looks beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes down the aisle, and before anything can even happen, she objects. And then Jack objects, and then Peter's like, yeah, I think I object too. And then the time finally comes for Sandra to tell the truth, that she's in love with the brother.
Mm-hmm.
And her monologue is so beautiful.
It is, because it could be that moment where, you know, she has to come forward and show, like, how duplicitous she's been. But it doesn't come across that way at all. because it was never intended that way. Because she performs it so genuinely, it just like comes off as like this. She is a very lonely person who for the first time was kind of teased with something that she really wanted.
It's one of those, I think, rare moments where someone does something bad, but their intention behind it is so pure and so innocent that no one's mad. Like, even if you want to be mad, you can't.
Yeah, that no one's mad at him.
You just want her to be happy.
Right. Yeah, and they're all baffled, and that makes sense. They need some time to catch up, but it doesn't seem like anybody is angry. They're just stunned.
Yeah. And then Ashley Bartlett Bacon bursts in and says that she objects, and so does the guy behind her. And they're like, who's that? Her husband. You proposed to a married woman?
Yes, and then we get the last scene.
The last scene, she's back in her toll booth and feeling sad. She takes tokens, people walk by, and then a ring drops in her little thing. I don't know what that's called.
Slidey space.
Her token slidey space. She looks up, and there's Jack and the whole family.
And the whole family.
Minus just Peter.
Grinning from ear to ear.
And he says, I have to ask you a question. She says, I can't. Not without a token. So he puts the token in. He comes into the booth. And he kneels down and asks her to marry him. And she says, yes. And they kiss. And it's wonderful. And then they're on the train heading to Florence for their honeymoon.
And she's so glad that life doesn't turn out always the way you've planned. Like her daddy says.
The end.
The end.
I love it. I love it so much.
It is a good one, for sure.
It is. So I have a couple more quotes.
Great.
Let's see. It was the most fun I had ever had on a film. When we got off work, we would all find a local salsa dancing place or a place to eat. We would slide dance and have scattergory parties or just do crazy stuff. I go, where did I get this energy? I don't think I ever slept. Everything about the experience was magical. Apparently, this was one of those, the director even said, you know, I hate when people say this was a dream experience, a dream cast. It was everything that anybody would ever want. That doesn't happen until I was on this film, and that's exactly what I got, and so I understand why people say that now.
Aww.
This was, yeah, just a wonderful film to work on. It turned out to be a major success. It's what, you know, really started her career, and the fact that she's so grateful for it and recognizes that this is what the opportunity she needed.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew it from the start that she wanted to have that part, and pure gold.
Yeah. That's really awesome. I didn't realize that this was like, you know, the main star building experience for her.
I mean, Speed was a big one, but it came out right before this, but this is what really launched it.
Right. I mean, it made like four times its budget, something like that.
Ten times
its budget.
Ten.
Yeah, times. I mean, that's an insane success.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that was While You Were Sleeping. I love it.
I'm so glad that this is what we started with.
Me too.
Yeah. It's a good one to start with.
It just warms my heart.
So, should we announce what we're watching next?
Absolutely. What are we doing, Bailey? It's your pick.
Okay, so I drew Action Adventure, and I chose Demolition Man, a movie from some year that I have not looked up yet because I haven't done the research.
But we'll find out all about it next time. Until then.
This has been Two Sisters Present
America's Sweethearts. See you next time.
Ciao.